We are going to be continuing in 10 minutes. This afternoon, we've got Emotional Sobriety with Steve Lee and June G. It's an AA workshop, but it's an open workshop for everybody to attend. And I don't know if you've been to Emotional Sobriety. It's quite enjoyable. It's got a slightly different slant than your regular AA meeting. Sometimes you just may think you sit in an Al-Anon meeting when you hear them talk about emotional sobriety. So, Diana, what are you doing besides blowing your nose and having allergies?
I'm looking for a bell ringer to ring. Would you like a bell ringer?
I would like something, yes.
I'm Diana. A member shares from Australia. When I attended my first meeting in 1967, I deliberately chose a daytime meeting because I didn't intend to let my husband know that what I was doing. I was concerned about the effects my husband's drinking was having on our four sons. And I realized at that first meeting that I had become part of the problem by enabling him to continue to drink while I dealt with the disasters caused by his drinking. I'm Diana, and that's the way it was. Al-Anon in South Africa. I attended my first Al-Anon meeting at Rondebosch in the mid-1950s. I was not impressed with the terrible little room under the bridge. There was only an uneven earth floor with benches to sit on, but the vibes were tremendous. For the first time, I felt that the people there understood how I felt. This little room was often filled to bursting point with members sitting on the floor. There was so much sharing. This was the first group in South Africa to register with Al-Anon Family Group headquarters. I'm Diana, and that's the way it was. Thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you, Diana.
This is really great. And thank you so much, Stephanie. Stephanie, this is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diana. Mary Lou, it's so good to see you. How is your knee? Unmute yourself there for a second.
Wonderful. It's wonderful.
Great. Mary Lou's coming.
It's good to see you again and get back in this room.
Right.
Life is good.
Well, that is...
Granddaughter is 6 weeks old now.
Oh, how cute. COVID baby. Thank you, Mary Lou. It's good to see you. And Karen, look at you. You've got your granddaughter there. Unmute yourself there for a sec.
Hi, Louise. Hi, Yvonne. Louisa, I was going to say. This is Macy, and Alfie's hiding. He doesn't want MD to see him. This is the youngest member of Al-Anon order. Say hi, Macy.
Hi,
say hi, Yvonne.
What's the weather in Scotland?
It's lovely, gorgeous.
God.
We've been feeding, away to feed the ducks.
Nice. Good to see you. All right, move on. Margaret, how are you doing?
It's a really rough week.
Really?
My, I just put it in the chat. My 47-year-old nephew suddenly died just before midnight, Tuesday. So I can't tell you how incredibly appropriate this is. So I'm actually Zooming with you guys and repeating the, in-service thing for the assembly voting at the same time. I'm double because I'm already good with them, but I'm just helping them out. I go, no, man, I am not missing this. This is so wonderful. I'm so in gratitude.
Thank you. Thank you. I will give you a call later this week. Margaret.
Okay.
Allie. I just have a suggestion. Well, look at that. Oh, where did you go? God, I hate it when it jumps. Mr. Steve Lee.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you guys?
Good. How is Nashville?
Nashville, we've got a beautiful day today, about 55 degrees, which is much cooler for us than normal. And been out running some errands and got in for the last 15 or 20 minutes of my dear friend Stephanie, and can't wait to hear the rest of her today.
Great. Thank you. We'll be listening to Steve later, right, Steve? You're gonna talk to us about growing up.
Well, the challenges with growing up.
Love it. Thank you. All right. What am I doing for time? Leona, how are you doing in Victoria, Canada? I love Victoria. Been there?
Thank you. I do too.
You live there. It's nice, mellow weather.
Yes. Yes, we finally, the smoke has finally left, and now we have rain. See?
Oh, we would love to have rain in California. I do that again. That stained glass. Love that.
Thank you. I'm in the Al-Anon office, the AIS office.
Oh.
In Victoria. Banking books.
You've got everything. Oh, I love that. I love that. Thank you for being here, Leona.
Oh, thank you. I just love it. Every Saturday we have some sort of meeting that I need to attend because I'm the DR as well in our Victoria. So I miss some of your workshops. I have to go now to another meeting, and then this afternoon I'm going to log back in again as soon as the meeting's over.
They're all recorded, so if you want to listen to them afterwards.
Yes. Oh, I do. I don't miss any of the speakers.
The whole 8 months, or what is it now? 7 months, 6 months?
Yeah. I've been sending my sponsees to those, and they love them.
Job.
Yeah. Thanks, Yvonne.
You're welcome. What else we got going on here? Pat, my dear friend Pat. Oh, my gosh.
Yvonne, I'm just going to eat my dinner. I'm having an Indian.
Oh, you're having dinner. Well, I haven't even gotten to breakfast. It's only 10 a.m. Well, have a good dinner, darling. I will leave you alone.
10 past six.
Good.
I'm still listening.
I know. I know you are.
And thank you.
Also from Arizona, my lovely Doris. I'm so happy to see your face. It's been a little bit.
I'm happy to be here. Stephanie was fabulous.
Don't you just love her? Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I was listening to Stephanie, and the story got better and the story got better and the story got better, and I got more and more resentful. I'm like, it must be nice having a daughter and a son and a husband. I'm like, isn't it just beautiful? I was going, I'll never have that. And then she dropped that bomb, and I was like, what did she just say? And I had to go back, and I'm like, oh my gosh, she doesn't have everything. You know, I remember that distinctly the first time I listened to her. So thank you for being here, Doris.
Well, thank you, Yvonne, very much.
It seems a little strange to see my friend Doris this way, and that's the only way I can see her. I miss seeing you.
Those ladies live in Arizona. Isn't that funny? Nowadays, we can live around the corner. We have to see each other on Zoom. And here's another old friend of mine, Amanda. Miss Amanda C, how are you doing?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I'm talking to you, Amanda.
Yeah. Oh, hi. I just log in.
How are you?
Yeah.
Hauled up in your house?
Pardon me?
Have you been hauled up in your house?
Yes. And I was just recently diagnosed with breast cancer. And tomorrow I'm going to, no, Monday, I'm going to have my lumpectomy. Thankfully, they got it on time. So it's stage one. So I am doing a lot of self-reflection and praying, because I had the cancer 27 years ago,
I know. I was just going to ask you. I remember you saying that.
Yeah, and so that was the time when my son was a teenager and he was really at his worst. And so 27 years later, I have it now again. But it's completely different because I have the program now, and that is what is really carrying me through all this.
Emma, let me know if you need any help, all right?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Don't live far away, and I love you. I've known Amanda for 20 years now. Come and say hi to Amanda. Look, it's Patricia. Welcome to my house.
Hello.
Hi.
That sounds like Amanda.
I'm going to go back to Stephanie. Stephanie, are you there?
I am. Oh. I'm
going to hand it over to you again.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow. I read some of the chats, and I also know that everybody is in their own place. You know, I want to tell you some things that I said at the very beginning. I have no answers for anybody. What I'm sharing is my experience, strength, and hope. I have read a lot. The most beautiful gift that I think Al-Anon has received in maybe all of its life is the book Opening Our Hearts and Transforming Our Losses. When we brought it to a book study at my home group, one of the girls said, I don't want to read that. It's going to be so depressing. This is not a depressing book. This is a book about validation. This is a book, you're not crazy. This is a book that gives names to what we're feeling. It really, you know, one of the things that I thought was so important when I went to my very first Al-Anon meeting was that there were people sitting there shaking their heads up and down. Oh, yeah, I know how you feel. Oh, yeah. And it is, that's what binds us together. So our grief is individual. Some of us may be grieving for, you know, on and off forever. But what I know, I've made some notes here. At the beginning of my talk, I said my talk's going to be like Greek. So this next hour probably is going to be that way too, because I've got all these things in my mind. But I'm going to read one page or a little bit from the page in Opening Our Hearts and Transforming Our Losses. It is about grief, but it is not a depressing book. It says to you, if you're feeling this way, it could be. So I want to read this to you. Grief is exhausting. Grief is unpredictable. Fear, confusion, and lack of concentration can accompany us for months. We may become forgetful and irritable. We may have depression and anxiety. These are all symptoms of grief. A girl I sponsored told me the other day she was so grateful that we talked about grief, because she said, when I went to my first Al-Anon meeting, I was filled with anger. I was just rageful. And now, years later, I understand I was grieving. That anger is part of the grief. We have these stages: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. They are just listed, but they are not in order. You don't have to do, okay, I did the denial. Okay, now I'm on to anger. That's not how this works. This is just to help you identify what's going on with you. You're not crazy. Oh, so this is page 6 out of How Al-Anon Works. Okay. I'm going to be reading several of them out of this book. I just think it's wonderful. If we've been unaware of our losses until now, we may have years of unexpressed feelings to face. Well, that's me. I'm raised in a home where you don't have any feelings. You're fine. And then I read where it says, you know, pretending you don't have them doesn't really make you feel any better. It just pushes them down. They're gonna come up. We can be patient and gentle with ourselves, trusting that wherever we are is exactly where we are supposed to be. Al-Anon recognizes grief is a natural part of life. It is not a punishment. This is on page 7 and how Al-Anon works. We're not being punished when we have grief. There was a couple of other things I wanted to read that about pressing it down. Pretending we are fine does little to improve the way we feel. We cannot escape our feelings. We only postpone them. Anyway, so I want to talk to you about some of that. And I'm going to do it through sharing my life, what we talked about just now. First of all, I want to tell you when I came into the room. Well, you know, we said at the very beginning of this workshop, in Al-Anon, grief was not even mentioned in our first daily reader. Now we have a book about it. It's the topic of a workshop. It is out there. People are talking about it. It is, to me, how we get better. Did you know that there are grief centers for children? There's over 100 of them in the United States of America. They are acknowledging for these sweet young people when their brother commits suicide, when their grandpa dies suddenly. These little children are being validated. You know, I just think it's going to improve the quality of lives for a lot of people. Okay, so let's talk about the first one. When I come into Al-Anon and I'm there for a year and I can't stop crying, and Blanche says, you are grieving the loss of a dream. I do believe that that's one of the biggest griefs we experience. We all have dreams. We all hope for something. We've got, whether it's realistic or unrealistic, we have this. And we come, when you're, alcoholism is a disease of losses. That's just a fact. You know, and different kinds of losses. The other part is I'm crying. Then I look at the grief I felt wrapped around and the loss of a dream, my family. Not only are we held in the grips of alcoholism, but I was trying to raise this perfect family. I was pretty sure we were going to have the beautiful children and the successful, and the family was going to be all together and whole. My illness, not just my part in the disease of alcoholism, really messed up our family. I would be crying and Wes would come up and say, Mom, are you okay? And I'd go, yes, I'm fine. Oh, so the message I give this boy is, Mom cries when everything's fine. And Laura would just be, Mom, are you? Yeah, I'm fine. I never said, I hurt, I'm angry, I am sad. So I felt, and I felt guilt. You know, how could I have messed up these kids so badly? And the answer is, I didn't know any better. You told me, get off that. Guilt serves nothing. Guilt is the one emotion that serves no purpose whatsoever, no matter what you're talking about. Okay, so I had to let myself go. Then when I started looking at my 4-step, and I go back and I look at the family I'm raised in, and I think, isn't that sad? I could never tell anybody how I felt. There was never any closeness that way. We were always just doing what we needed to do. And living in the disease of alcoholism, I had to grieve the loss of my self-awareness. Do you know how many people come into the Al-Anon meeting for the first time and say, I have no idea who I am? I have been Laura and Wes's mom. I've been Bill's wife. I've been a school teacher. But who are you? I have no idea. that we're grieving the loss of our self-awareness. I do not know who I am. Tell me, who are you? When you say something, I'll go, oh, okay. You know, what color do you like? I don't know. I like purple. Oh, okay. I used to tell, Blanche would say to me, does that make you angry? Whatever the topic was. And I would go, no, it just hurt my feelings. And she'd say, that would have made me angry. And I go, okay, I'm going to be angry. I mean, people had to tell me, this will make you angry. Oh, okay, I'll be angry now. I had no idea. I just felt sorry for myself. I was such a victim. Oh my God, how pathetic is that? Anyway, I'm glad I'm not there anymore. But that's what the four step did for me. It let me see that I could tell you all about what was going on with everybody else, but not me. And I had no idea who I was. The next thing I have to tell you in this four step, and I'm not sure how this plays into the grief thing, but when I was writing, it was a life story Blanche had asked me to write. As I was writing, I would get to something that was really hard. And I called Blanche, and let me tell you what it was. I had a very, very dear friend whose baby was born with a malignant brain tumor. The baby lived for 11 months. As I'm writing my life story, I get to that part and I start shaking and crying. And the grief, and it was years before, it was 15 years. And I'm just, and it's not, I mean, I didn't lose the baby. Kay did. But so I called Blanche and I said, I'm not going to write this anymore. I'm done. And she said, put your pen down and go for a walk. She said, it's okay. You can continue. Just give yourself, be patient, be easy. And that's what I think with this grief process might be the number one thing on our checkoff list. Are you being gentle with yourself? Blanche gave me a plaque that was in my classroom that says, please remember in everything, be gentle with yourself. We are in a process of learning how to feel our feelings, learning how to interact with other people. We are doing it through the 12 steps, which is such a blessing. Not everybody's in the 12-step program, but we are learning how we can do that. So that's what this grief is. And I did grieve my sweet friend Kay and the loss of her baby. And then when Laura left home, I mean, I just, wait, what is happening here? And driving her to Denton, I cried all the way. And I'm mourning what I think I have to be happy, right? Oh, yeah, mourning my expectations. Oh, wow, that's a big one. I don't know how we get around that. Because I think we all have expectations. But I think it's important that when they don't work out, and Al-Anon, they said, it's okay to hope that that expectation is going to lead to resentment. You know, well, so we try really hard to not have them, but we're human. Then when we moved to Virginia, oh my gosh, how do I leave my home and my children and my sponsor and what is familiar? So sometimes the grief is all involved in leaving what is familiar, even if it's going to be better on the other side. It doesn't make any difference. We are having to leave what is familiar. So in our literature, it says change, good or not good, is we're going to be grieving it. Oh, I'm changing now. I get to, you know, I'm changing now. When things are changing, you know what I'd like to propose also? This just popped into this poor little brain of mine. I think I have to grieve when I do step 6 and 7. Oh my gosh, you're kidding me. I have character defects. I mean, and Blanche was okay about writing them down for me. But that was, you know, I really had no idea. I mean, I didn't have any idea how judgmental I was, how opinionated, how I could procrastinate, so I think there's grief wrapped up in step 4, looking at our past and our childhood and what? You mean we could never tell each other how we felt, or I didn't get to be prom queen, or I didn't get to be on that drill squad, or, you know, grief is everywhere, people. Okay, I probably need to settle down. take a breath. I just get worked up because I think it's so important in our healing. Okay, so let's go on to a change. You know, moved to Virginia, hated leaving Austin, Texas. Love rest in Virginia. The next thing, of course, is with Laura's pregnancy. I was grieving the fact that she didn't do it like it was supposed to be done. I had expectations. I thought we were going to follow the rules. Why would I think that? And what a ridiculous concept. How grateful I am that Rita said, can you just say it's what is? You can judge it and you can grieve it and you can, it's not what I wanted. It's just what is. Laura had another baby and she gave that baby up for adoption. I was sitting on the steps of my school crying and the teachers were coming out going, are you okay? And I said, I'm never gonna see my grandbaby. My daughter gave her up for adoption. This is the worst day ever. Laura was reunited with her beautiful daughter several years ago. Carly is teaching. She is married and she is going to make Laura a grandma and me a great grandma in December. I mean, that adoption was so hard and yet the blessings on the other side of it. Oh my gosh. Carly is a blessing to us. At the time, I thought I was, I don't ever do anything apparently halfway. Okay, so now we're all blessed, right? And then my daddy dies. And I talked to you about that in my story. You know, getting that phone call and saying, wait, that can't be happening. So I am denying reality. I am going to grieve the reality of this situation. Daddy cannot die. He was 76 years old and healthy as a horse. That cannot be happening. So I am grieving reality, no matter what it is. Makes it really hard to move on. I thought it wasn't fair. How could it be fair? It is what it is. Okay, now we're going to talk about what was... on the little blurb where it said grief, the loss, and then it said suicide. So I'm going to talk to you about what Bill's suicide or how it affected me. I have to tell you, this is just my experience. I want to be sure that you don't feel like I'm telling you a right or a wrong way to do anything. This is just what I lived with and what I've learned from counseling. I cannot tell you how important it is that if you are dealing or have dealt with a suicide, that you get professional help. Nancy says to me, that's the counselor I went to see. I was so grateful Blanche told me, when your life changes in one instant, you have been traumatized. It has all sorts of effects that go with it. For one of them, you think you're going crazy. Your mind is so charged with that trauma. When that policeman, well, it was a policeman and a chaplain, rang my doorbell that Monday night, at that point, my life completely changed. I hyperventilated. I cried. I couldn't get thoughts in my brain. I forgot what I was doing. I mean, it was just trauma is hard. It's really hard. And you know what? We do that. This is the one death where there's all these questions and there's no answers. What could I have said? What could I have done? Why didn't I know it? We were together 33 years. How could this possibly be happening? I love that man. I kissed him that morning and told him I loved him. And he kissed me and told me he loved me. And that night, he's dead. How does that happen? In sobriety. Because depression is also an illness. And it's not to be messed around with. I had people say, didn't you see it coming? Bill and I had been to dinner and to the grocery store the night before. Here's what I know. I tried to make sense of something that you can't. Here's something else that I know. Bill's suicide had absolutely nothing to do with me. Nothing. If you looked at our lives in 1994, you would say, what a beautiful family. What a beautiful marriage. They love each other. We were financially secure for the first time. Bill had a job he enjoyed. I loved teaching. It never was about the outside. It's about the inside. Bill had a hole in him that needed to be filled. Whatever. I don't know about depression, which also made it very hard for me to accept. My thing is, if today's not going good, wait till tomorrow. It's going to be better. Bill's thought apparently was, today is horrible and tomorrow is going to be even worse. Something else I'll tell you about our experience. Laura, Wes, and I never were on the same page at the same time. Sometimes Laura would be angry and I would be in denial. I would feel depressed and Wes would be at acceptance. We never were until like 15 years later. I should ask Laura the exact time, because there's some time after Bill's death that Laura and I were sitting at a Slotsky's having lunch, and we started talking about her daddy. And we got to a common page. It was years after he died. And people have no idea how you're feeling if you don't tell them. And did you know people, they don't have any idea what to say to you. Two things I need to hear. You need to hear. The teachers at my school, one of them came up and said to me, I cannot be your friend anymore. If that could happen to you and Bill, then it could happen to me. I can't be your friend anymore. It just brought it too close to home. It shouldn't have happened to us, so therefore, too scary. And I just looked at her and went, what? The other thing is, I went to an Al-Anon meeting and people knew about Bill's death. And this girl came up to me afterwards and she said, I know just how you felt. I lost my cat yesterday. Now, my reaction was, are you kidding me? My husband commits suicide and you're comparing me to the death of your cat? I left that meeting so angry. I called Blanche. She said, Stephanie, that cat was very important to her. You can't compare. That was her pain. Her pain was the loss of her cat. Yours was the loss of your husband. They didn't have anything to do with each other. So I think that's where we kind of get confused when we're looking at our pain and then we're looking at their pain. And it's kind of like, yeah, but you don't understand. My pain's worse than yours. I sat in meetings for a long time waiting for somebody to say my husband was sober and committed suicide. I haven't heard it yet. I can't look for that. I have to find the peace that I need today. And I feel as if I had. Where's the next part? You know, one of the things I hear people say all the time is I don't want to feel the feeling because I'm afraid I'll start crying and I'll never stop. A sweet friend of mine, sober member in AA and in Al-Anon, said to me, well, I'm not sure you do. Your tears just get softer and the quantity becomes less. So I believe it's true. I will never be over the pain of losing Bill or my dad or Blanche. I do know that I have reached a point where I have gratitude for their lives. I have gratitude that I am in a program that says to me, hold my hand. Blanche said to me, pray that your pain not be wasted. Because you are sitting here today, my pain is not being wasted. I am sharing with you my experience. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story about Bill and I. It was our 20th wedding anniversary, I think. And maybe it was our 25th. I don't know. We were going out to dinner. I'm all dressed up. He's all dressed up. We're driving in the car. And he pulls into a gravel parking lot. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, just a minute. He gets out of the car, comes around, and he opens my door. He asks me to get out of the car. He turns up the radio. Anne Murray is singing, May I Have This Dance for the Rest of My Life. Bill and I are dancing in that gravel parking lot to Anne Murray's song. Ah, it was so romantic. I couldn't believe it. Can I have this dance for the rest of my life? Years after Bill died, well, not that many, maybe five, no, probably 6 years. I'm driving. That song comes on the radio. Anne Murray, May I Have This Dance for the Rest of My Life. I started hyperventilating. I cried so hard I had to pull my car off. I could not believe it was like, oh my God, I don't have that anymore. And I cried and I cried. Continued on. About a year later, song comes on the radio. I'm going, oh my gosh, that was so sad. He's not here. About another year later, the song comes on the radio. I pull over to the side and I go, oh my gosh, was that not the greatest evening? Did we not have a beautiful dance together? By the grace of God, that deep sorrow and grief had been transformed into a happy memory. I got to dance with him. He loved me enough that he pulled the car over and we danced in our dress-up clothes in a parking lot. That is to tell you that that's pretty much my experience with grief. It hurts so bad, you have to pull the car over. You have to just cry. You have to feel the pain. And with time and with space, hopefully, there'll be a happy memory in there. So this is what I also believe to be true. Different things can prompt my grief with Bill, or my dad, or my mom. We celebrate my mom's birthday by having a big spaghetti dinner every June. And, you know, they're sad, but it's joyful. All of her grandchildren and great-grandchildren are there. But it's a sadness. It's an anniversary of a death. That also, I'll remember like it was yesterday, the day Bill died. And I lived through it. You continue on. Every February the 28th, that's going to be it. But then also, so you have anniversary, you have movies. You have music. Oh my gosh, you have music. Bill and I love to dance. He loved me. We had music playing in our house all the time. We love it. So a song can come on the radio, and usually, I hate to tell you this, but I will be dancing by myself in my living room. I'll just put my hands up and pretend I'm dancing because I just love that music. And he's not here. I'm here. That's the other thing. I had to have people say to me, Bill died, you didn't. You have a life to live. you will live that life. So by your grace, that happened. So the movies, the music, all that sort of stuff. So you know what? The way I think I begin the grief, I have to journal. I have to write down what's happening, whether it happened in the past or whether it's happening now or whether it happened yesterday. If I want to get in touch with my grief, and if I want to get in touch with what, how am I feeling? Very seldom when people say to you or say to me, Stephanie, how are you feeling? Very seldom do I say, you know, I'm grieving. I feel really sad about, because it's not here. So I usually say I'm doing pretty good. But if I write, and I have written letters to Bill, and I have written letters to God, and not of them angry, it's just, I wanted to talk. Just wanted to talk. So by journaling, by listening in meetings, we're going to, in a little bit, we're going to open this up so that you get to share. But I'll tell you what, if you don't get an opportunity to share in this next hour, you do it at your meeting. Do it with your sponsor. Talk about it. Talk what you're feeling. Write it down and read it to somebody. I am hurting. Tell me about it. Well, my cat died. What a loss. I'm so sorry. Oh, I can't find my grandmother's engagement ring. It was the most important thing I have from her. I have no idea where that is. I'm sick. It's a loss. It doesn't make any difference. It's not just about death. It is for sure, but there's so much more. You know, for me, I'm losing my mind. I think I'll grieve that. No, you know what? I'm losing my youth, but I can grieve that because I'm still okay today. So you're journaling, you're listening in meetings. We hope you do what Al-Anon calls the three A's. We hope you have some awareness. What has happened to you? How do you feel about that? And then you get to the place of accept it. Usually, that's one of my hardest things, is it's in the past, it's over and done with. So let's accept that this is the reality of it. And then take action. Do you need to take a bubble bath? Do you need to eat chocolate? Do you need to sit down and cry? Let me tell you something. This is an awareness I had this morning. If you need to grieve and you can't, turn on a country western music show. They have more sad songs on a country western music station than you can imagine. Oh, he's left me. Oh, I can't find her. Oh, I mean, this morning I'm listening to it and I'm thinking, every one of these songs, we could grieve over this. This is really sad. The daddy got in the big truck and drove off and he's called, get her done. I mean, it's just, so if you need something to, there's movies you can rent. If you need to cry, there are movies you can rent. Obviously, I have no problem crying, but there are people and people that I have sponsored. I also want to tell you about one other girl I sponsored because this seemed to be so critical in our sharing. She would come in and start talking. And Blanche had us meet for an hour. So every girl, anybody that I sponsor, we meet for an hour once a week until we're through with the ninth step. And then we meet every other week. And we just, that's what we do. Well, this girl that I sponsored several years ago would come in and just talk forever. And then when she would get ready to leave, I'd say, so, can you tell me what's going on with you? She had to sit in my chair for an hour before she could get real. Sometimes you just have to sit still to get real. I think that might be an Al-Anon slogan. But you know, that's what we do. We run. I'm going to avoid this feeling. I don't want to feel it. It's going to hurt. I don't want to hurt. So I think I'll just, you know, I'm going to eat, or I'm going to sleep, or I'm going to, you know, go see what I can do to help somebody else. you know, I'm telling you, you need to sit still. The grief is there. And it's not, I really do believe that we need to experience to be healthy people. Because for me, I will act it out. That anger, that depression, that denial. You know, my favorite line when Bill was drinking was, it's not that bad. Not that bad. Really was bad. Okay, so let's go on and talk one more thing. A friend of mine told me there's a great book called Necessary Losses. I'm just throwing it out there. Now let's talk about the loss of money. You know, that was a lot of money that I lost. And I did not take care of it. And I felt guilty because I thought I should have known better. You know, it's still one of those things where I did the best I could. If somebody had told me, you need to check out and be sure he's bonded, he's insured, be sure all this, I would have done that. Nobody told me. I trusted him. I had invested with him. I knew him. I knew his mom, I mean, his wife and their kids. I mean, doesn't make any difference. But the guilt of me just being a human being and making a mistake. And I'm telling you, guilt is it's such a pointless emotion. The death of my sweet puppy, Rosie. After my retirement, I didn't really know what was going to happen to my life. Didn't know how, because all I had ever done was teach school and loved every minute of it. It was my passion. So when I retired, I got to move from the grief of losing my youth to the gratitude that I could do what I loved for 34 years. Wow. So I felt grateful. So I get Rosie, the most beautiful Springer Spaniel. She never barked, but when I walked in the door, she'd howl. Oh! I cried when Rosie died, and I cried a lot. And at nighttime, when she was alive, when I would turn out my light, I would say, good night, Rosie, I love you. Well, that was 2 years ago. Every once in a while now, when I turn out my light, I say, good night, Rosie, I love you. It's just a sadness. You know, she was a beautiful dog, and she filled up a beautiful space in my life. And I think there are a lot of people that lose their pets that have to go through the grief process. And it is hard. It is so hard. Okay, let's see what else we need to share here before. It's almost time for us to open it up yet. No, we're doing okay. So I want to be sure I get it. Did you know? I wrote this down. Grief is part of being alive. I guess we're going to have sadness and sorrow, and then we're going to have joy. All right. Wow. Also, this is really pretty important. Where you are in the grief process is not a reflection on how you're working your program or the program. We work the program to the best of our ability, and we grieve. Sometimes when I would get sucked down into the depression part of grief. And I don't suffer from depression, but when I am grieving, I can get very, very sad. And then I think, wait, I should know better. God loves me. This too shall pass. How important is it? Well, you know, all of that is real and it's true, but when I'm hurting, I'm hurting. And it doesn't mean that I am losing touch with God are losing touch with the Al-Anon program. I'm just in the process. That is the key word, process. This is a process. We don't get there. And for me anyway, especially with the big losses like Bill, like my dad, like Blanche, they don't really go away. But when I think of Blanche now, there is no sadness. There is only gratitude. I cannot even imagine what my life would have been like had she not been a part of it. I cannot thank God enough for her life and for my daddy. He was an egotistical, narcissistic man who just really cared about himself. But by golly, I love that man. And I think he loved me to the best of his ability. And then the loss of my mom. You know, she was the grandma that everybody idolized. And the loss of Bill. And I have people today that I sponsor that say, oh, I don't want to burden you with this because, well, you don't have a husband. Are you kidding me? Please tell me. I want to know what's going on in your life. It doesn't have to be. Don't take care of me. I will deal with it. If I have a sadness wrapped around something you're sharing, I'll deal with it after you leave. But I don't want you to, monitor your sharings because you're afraid that you're going to hurt my feelings. Give me a little more credit than that. I have been working at this for a while. I will try to go. I'll call Dawn. Dawn said to me, I'm telling you, that woman, she's the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life. She suffers from macular degeneration and she can hardly see anything. But she'll tell me, I said, let's FaceTime. She says, oh, no, my hair doesn't look. I haven't had a dog. Anyway, the good news for her today is that she is sitting in her condo in Chicago holding her great grandson. First time she's ever seen her grandson, and she gets to hold him today. Oh, I'm so happy for her. Her thing to me, though, is what she says is, Stephanie, leave it alone. That's her favorite phrase. No matter what I'm talking to her about, she'll say, you know what, just leave it alone. If I'll say, well, I think I ought to call Laura. You know, Stephanie, let's just leave it alone. And I'll say, well, I think I'm going to do this. And she said, well, let's just leave it alone. She really encourages me to stay in present time. Be right here, right now, here. This is where it's at. Let's do this minute by minute. Let's be in present time. And she says, don't we serve an awesome God? So I've got to get one more thing I want to share. Threefold, right? Grief, the physical, the I can't eat. I just want to sleep. Pull the covers over my head and let it all go away. You know, I'm dizzy. I can't focus. Those are all physical characteristics of the grief process. And they can really make, for me, made me think I was crazy. And especially like when I would go into, now this is the emotional part. I'm going into the other room and I have no idea why I'm there. Now I think it's because I'm 75. But when Bill died, it was like, what? I have to tell you this also about when Bill died. I went to the grocery store probably 3 to 6 months after he died. And I walked in and I started hyperventilating. I couldn't get my breath. And it scared me so. I've never done that. I got home. We didn't have cell phones then. I got home and I called Nancy, the counselor. I went, Nancy, I can't breathe. I can't go. And she said, where are you? And I said, I'm in the grocery store. She said, no, Stephanie, go home. And I said, what? And she said, the day that the police officer and chaplain came to my door, all of my senses went on overload. And when I walked into the grocery store, all of my senses went on overload. Too many colors, too many pieces, too much noise, too much action. She said, you can't go to the grocery store for a while. Get somebody to do your shopping. That's what counseling will do for you. If you go to somebody when you're really, you don't know what's going on. That's it. Okay, so let's go back. So physical, emotional. Now, you know, for me, right? I cry. That's what I do. I pout really well too. But there are some people that can't cry. So what do you do with those emotions? Usually we act them out. We get angry with somebody that we're not angry with. I find this in myself now, that I can be driving and I can get so mad there's a corner of 281 that I go down all the time, and people race to try to get in front of me so they can do that one lane thing, and I get mad at them all the time. And so I stop myself and I go, what is that about? Did you do your prayer and meditation this morning? Are you asking for God's will? What are you mad at that driver? I have no idea, but I'll tell you what, I bet it's still a reaction from grief. I bet somewhere inside of me, there is grief. And that's what it is. It comes out as anger. Okay, so spiritual. I pray that if you are going through, and I hope we all are, because I think that's how we move. We know that there is a power greater than ourselves that loves us so much. When Bill died, I had people come to me and say, well, I guess it was his time. I'm sorry, I don't believe that. I just believe that Bill made a choice. In insanity, he was insane, and he made a choice. It had nothing to do with me. And I don't have to blame God for that. Some people do. Some people think that it's a sin. Suicide's a sin. Well, you know, you can go there if you want to. That's not how I believe. I believe that God cried the day Bill died. I believe that God was really sad that his life ended so soon. He had so much, so funny, so gifted. So I think God cried when Bill died. I do a lot of that in my grief. I think God is right there beside me. When I am crying, he is too. Or he's wrapping his arm around me saying, it's going to be okay. Let's just take a breath. Go get a drink of water. Go for a walk. Look at nature. You don't have to stay in this if you choose not to. You can always come back to it. It's not going anywhere. So I don't have to be sure I'm going to get all of my grief done today, or it can't. It's a process. It's going to start and stop and start and stop. And one day I'll be happy and I'll go, oh gosh, I think I'm better. But I almost never say that. I almost never say I think I'm better, because that anticipatory grief, I used to do that all the time. Bill would say, how's everything going? I say, great. And the next thing you know, the dishwasher would be broken. And so I think, I'm not going to tell you anymore that things are great. So I shared that with Blanche one time. I said, Blanche, I'm not going to say anymore things are going good. And she said, why not? And I said, because I think I jinx it. I think that bad stuff's going to happen. She said, here's what I'd like for you to do. When you get ready to say, somebody says, how are things? You can say, you know what? They're okay today. And I think they're going to be better tomorrow. So she had me turn that around to, it's going to be better. It's going to be better. So that I am very grateful for. Okay. I think I'll have to go back and look at this while we take a break. So let's see what time it is. Yvonne, is it time again to take a break? Yeah. Okay. So let me ask y'all. In the next hour, we're going to talk. We're going to open it up, I hope, so that you can share some too. I have some other thoughts that I'll bring together, but what I'd love for y'all to do, if you don't know where you are with any of this, if you have how Al-Anon works, opening our hearts and transforming our losses, I'm going to read some questions for you. They're on page 19. And this, if you don't have this, or if you're not sure where you are in the grief process, or if you even want to grieve, I want to read you the questions on page 19. So that maybe that would give you a beginning. Question number one, what am I grieving today? Have I admitted my powerlessness over my grief, or am I trying to control it? Am I giving myself time to grieve without worrying about how long it should take? When was the last time I shared my grief with a trusted loved one, my sponsor, my higher power, are at an Al-Anon meeting? What can I do today to be gentle with myself? Those are the questions on page 19. I can read them again. as we come back together. We'll take a break now for 10 minutes, Yvonne. Is that what you suggest?
Yeah, 10 minutes is good.
Okay. So anything that you want to share when we come back, Yvonne will be our timer, so we can't go on and on and on and on, although I wish we could because I'm not going anywhere. But you know what? We'll just be mindful of people that when they get ready to share. So we'll take a break now, 10 minutes. It's 1 o'clock, so we'll see y'all back here at 1:10. Or Yvonne opens the chatting and y'all can do whatever. Okay, thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you, Stephanie. Awesome. So it's the book, Opening Our Hearts, Transforming Our Losses. If you go to page 19, you will see some questions if you're interested. The book is a great book. It talks about every aspect of grief. And yeah, something to look at.